I'm now calling this meeting of May 22nd of 2025 in order. We're going to start with a roll call. Board members Carol Taylor is excused. Brett Denberg. Brett is online.
Here. Sorry. I'm here.
All good. We heard you. Lori Curtin.
Thank you.
Here.
Rebecca Rodriguez.
Here.
Robert Couch.
Here.
Sandra Honeygate, myself. The ex officio board member are Jen Lavender, absent. William Oglesby, excused and represented by Donna. And non board participants, Jacqueline Hoffman, thank you for organizing. And then approval of minutes. If there are no objections, we will adopt the last meeting's audio recording as our minutes. And if anybody wanted to object, you are welcome to say object. The minutes have then been adopted by unanimous consent. Public forum, I'm guessing there was no request there. Okay. Then the new board business item is the new member appointment updates. And I believe Donna has some updates maybe for the press there. The new member appointment updates.
I don't have any. Do you want me to share what I shared with you in the email?
If you like.
Or that, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what's with me. In the
council's office, the manager's office, received the information that you provided with regard to your non-recommendations. They were a little bit perplexed, given that it wasn't the same process as before. So I think there was some confusion and there's been a delay. So they wanted clarification. So I provided them clarification on that process. And then I was told that the dog owner was never advertised for, so that dog owner would not be assigned until a recruitment or a posting was done offering the vacancy.
Okay.
So that needs to happen, and then we can consider any applicants, including past applicants and future applicants for the dog owner role position. I don't have an update as to why the others haven't been assigned yet. I have not had an update recently. And I don't know if William has or not. But this confusion or this inquiry happened fairly recently.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. And then what's the best process for you, the county, to post it? Do you need our input on when we might be ready for interviewing, or are you okay to just...
No, we just need to send a request to the public information office to do a press release to post it.
Okay.
And that's all that needs to happen. So I knew it was on the agenda. I didn't know if there was any further discussion. I didn't know, to be honest, if there were any other positions that are vacant besides the previous ones. I don't know if anything's changed since the last meeting. So we can get that done pretty quickly.
And maybe after we talk about the bylaws, we can circle back to that just really quick, because the dog category, if that changes, because we've been, because what we talked about with the bylaws. So we'll talk about that. Sorry.
And then I guess we will only know which ones are still vacant once the county appoints some of them, right? So I don't know, like, in what order you just, I guess, let us know when.
Yeah, right.
When you
so that's part of it is that I, you know, until the new members are appointed, we don't really know what vacancies are, if they're going to take the recommendation in the way that's provided, or what they're going to do with that. I don't have an answer for that. My assumption is there will be an appointment, except for the dog owner, based on, the county manager's reading of what was provided, she'll make a decision. I do expect that to happen. Everybody's and SLAM. So I don't have that other update. I expect it to happen. It should happen soon. I can follow up and ask the question. Let's see if I can prompt it along.
Thank you very much. All right, then the next item is the handbook and bylaw workshop session update by Rebecca. Rebecca has been moving us forward on some great items.
Yeah, we're getting there. Okay, so we did, we went through the handbook, right? And there, I don't know if everybody got this very, very colorful email that I sent out to everyone. And so many of the, not many, but a handful of the things that are reflected in the handbook hinge on the bylaws, right? So I think that there weren't any big major changes to the handbook per se, but we've been focused on just updating it, right? Mm-hmm. Which led us into the bylaws, and that was a little more of a complex conversation. So these blue highlighted pieces that still needed to be delivered, just language that we were going to rework for the handbook, make them more succinct. I have not tackled those just yet, so I'll get those out as soon as I can. But the more important conversation, I think, is about the bylaws. So if you don't mind that we kind of shift to that, unless anybody has any questions about the handbook. Because again, all we're focusing on is updating that handbook to reflect current information. And some of that information may change based on what the bylaws, if we shift the bylaws. So
I want to compliment you and Lori for doing that work, the handbook information that we discussed at the last work session. Went really smoothly, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody's contribution. Here's that. We're all so appreciative. It's smart, don't you know what we're talking about? Okay, so in relation to the bylaws, these were the only areas. Do you want a copy of this, Jacqueline? Would that help you?
Sure.
Okay. I had submitted some questions to Donna, and she was kind enough to share kind of like a, just provide some clarity along these lines. One of those was, our ability as a board to access information so we can make thoughtful decisions, right? And I didn't remember when we talked about, like, are we the county or not the county, right? We are not the county. We are essentially the public, right? Would you say that we are the public? Or I don't know if there's another category, but we're not the county. I know that for sure.
It's almost, the best way that I can put it is you're like advisors. You're advisors.
Okay.
You're not county employees. Right. You're advisors to the county council manager, right? It's like oversight or...
like community oversight, kind of, right? Kind of like...
You're not... It's not, this is, by virtue of the county establishing this boarding code, I wouldn't say you're just the general public.
Right.
But it's not oversight. Oversight would have the authority to go in and check books and so on. So we're more of an
assumption, I'm not meaning it in that way.
Okay, so advisory means looking at the community's issues and needs. And trying to give us our opinion, what our board determines. It basically comes down to it, right?
A says it pretty well. A outlines that to advise the county counselors.
Mm-hmm.
Because the county counselors are the only ones that can affect change to policy, direction, and code.
Right?
And so as a manager, can recommend what I would like to see. They can choose to listen to me or not. Same with you, right? The idea of an advisory board is that it's members of the community that you're representing you're out there, you have certain areas of interest and interest or expertise and a goal. And you are, the goal is that those people out in the community are best able to provide relevant information in which to guide policy decisions. Is kind of the way that I look at it.
Okay.
It's kind of like when, for example, if the counselors want to know what the temperature is out in the community around wedding venues in the rural area, which are not currently allowed by code, and they assign a task force to go and get all the information, explore the options, and make a proposal. And the council will either like it or they won't like it. And staff.
So we're just kind of an ongoing task force kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. So,
The area that we were concerned about is what is the information gathering?
Right. And this is what set us down this crazy path was that one clause in the new contract, the one that says the county will maintain confidentiality related to records and information and discretion in conversations with the public and use discretion in conversations with the public. That, so I was like, are we the public or not the public? We're not the county. So that's where it came up, because we were like, okay, if we already know that if we want information, we submit it to you and then you get it over from
the county. Yeah, what that is for is when we have cruelty cases. Mm-hmm. When we have criminal cases, we don't need staff of the Humane Society talking about it in public. Our officers don't talk about it.
Right.
We want some discretion to protect the integrity of that investigation.
Right.
To potentially have a successful prosecution, we don't want to jeopardize any of that. So really, kind of where that comes from.
Okay. Right.
Good to know. Specific.
So what's your saying?
Yeah.
Right.
And what you're explaining last time is there's a need. We're going to present our need to you so you can further where you think it is.
What you have to remember is the contract provider is a private business. And because we have a county contract does not mean that everything that they do is our business,
right.
Nor do they have to provide us everything that we may want to ask. What they are required to provide us is outlined in the contract and is subject to public record request. Anybody can make that request. And if it's subject to public record request that they would have to provide the county, then it's public record.
Okay.
So that's why I say anybody can get the information that we have, right? Anybody can get the information that is provided to us by the Humane Society. Because once we have it, it's public record, right? So, but there are things that are not part of the contract that are none of anybody's business.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, any nonprofit entity has the right to a certain level of privacy.
Otherwise, no one would do business with the government.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that is a good point.
So one of the things in the contract that I was a little perplexed about is like a lot of terms were defined. Like, what was it? It was capacity. What is capacity?
They're at capacity?
Yeah, what is their
capacity? They get to decide what their capacity is. I can't tell you what their capacity is. They get to decide.
But they should, I mean, that should be defined in the contract. As a legal person, for me.
The thing is that the Humane Society, like, they presented very ambiguous terms. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way around that, right?
I don't pretend to know all the details. I will just play a devil's advocate here to a different point of view. Is they determine what's capacity. So if we if you're trying to look for a numerical standard that says 52 dogs, 32 cats, 3 guinea pigs, and whatever, that doesn't work, because on some days they may have 3 dogs and 200 cats, and they can shove 4 cats in 1 dog kennel. Right. I don't know. I'm just using that as an example. So they get to determine at what capacity. Now, what if they're short staffed? Because I'm just thinking from a business perspective. What if half of their staff is sick, COVID, quit, move on, and that affects capacity because they don't have the capacity to take care of the animals in their care.
Right.
So I don't know that we would ever drill down to get them to nail any of that down. I don't know whether that's appropriate for me to do that. I have to rely on them as the expert to determine how they can function.
Right. And one thing that's important for the county to understand, and for this entity also to understand, is that it is not unusual for organizations, for shelters, to massage those numbers. The main thing that most organizations try to avoid is euthanasia. That changes if you're hit, like every kennel's full, when we just have another 5 animals that came through the door. Now the ones that have been here the longest have to go. It is constantly turning on a dime. But it's also not unusual for organizations to hold kennels empty purposefully, to say we're only going to take in 3 dogs today. And you know, again, how they manage their population in their shelter is not an issue for this entity, unless it starts to intersect where stray animals are being turned away, or your staff is not able to take an animal.
Well, and that's what I want to tell you is they are contractually obligated to take any animal in.
Okay.
So we are not going to have an issue with them being at capacity.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Will they be able to turn away stray people that come in off the street with strays? Okay, so only the officers have
they're contractually obligated to take.
Okay, but not if a member of the public.
Correct.
Okay, that's good clarification. And this whole information bit of the confidentiality thing, kind of leaning mostly on investigations, that makes a lot of sense, and that answers a couple of these things that we were looking at, because we didn't know, do we have to try to accomplish our mandate of, and it's something you mentioned as far as sometimes, and it's like what we did when we made a recommendation about the contract, is that there was information we were not able to get. There was information they would not share with us, and we just simply said, we gathered as much information as we could, and here's our recommendation. So, okay.
There was one other thing in there that I wanted to ask about. They had a statement that says animals are to be spayed or neutered and microchipped as a condition of adoption, subject to the animal shelter's discretion. So does that mean that animals are going out that are not spayed and neutered?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I don't think so. I think that the Humane Society is really big at their discretion, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know that they want anybody telling them how to run their business.
Yeah.
I get that. I don't think that as a matter of course, that is something that they support. They 100% support spaying neuter. I think that you could look at that in terms of, what if an animal is super fragile, super sick, super on the edge? It's gonna, and maybe they don't can't.
Like an animal with a heart condition,
yeah,
that might go under anesthesia,
right. Same thing for microchipping, that they want to do all of those things, but are there instances where they can't? You know, maybe they have a doctor that says, I will not adopt that pet if it has a microchip because that's against my religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you that happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So are they going to, microchipping is not a requirement by law.
Right.
Right. So maybe that they choose not to do that for that animal, for those adopters.
Right.
Perfectly. And that's what that could mean. So that's an example.
Yeah. And my concern is just, you know, the straight population more than anything.
Yeah, I just think that it was a little bit of a contentious contract negotiation. And I just think that, you know, they're just trying to protect their autonomy in some cases. Mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced that it interferes with, in a way, in a negative way, that what animal protection control is trying to do.
Right. I mean, I think that I think something that's really important is that we have to look at taxpayers paid for the care of the strays for the stray fold. Now with this increase and this more more in-depth involvement where that taxpayer money is going for the full kit and caboodle to get the animal prepared and out the door, transferred, euthanized, whatever it is, right? It is to the county's advantage to have some type of an interest in what happens to the stray animals, because they are coming back in. They are landing in other rescues. They are being dumped. Like, it's not that you've got excellent adoptions taking place all the time, right? If an animal goes out adopted by an entity and it then is a stray, that's time and money and everything for the county. So what I look at is that nonprofit, that adopting agency, maybe it was a fluke, right? Because it does happen. Or maybe it was just a lax policy that allowed that dog to go out the door. And if we have more than that, more than one of those happening, we have to stop and ask ourselves, is the rescue community, the adopting agencies, contributing to the stray population problem by not vetting adopters appropriately? What is happening in those free adoption events where people are just showing up like, I'm here to get a cat, even though they don't have anything to be able to care for it? Because at the end of the day, someone is going to call animal control, and that becomes an expense for animal control. So
for the comment, based on our committee's research, we found that from our studying other organizations across the country, from a budgetary standpoint, if we had better licensing percentages, the small amount of people who report or organizations that report repeat animals coming in, it's small enough percentage to where they're not too concerned about it when you actually talk to the representatives, because they have a higher level of budget propelled by licensing. So that's what I've been finding by the phone calls I've been making, by the emails I've been sending. So
I'd like to see some of that data. That would be really helpful. So if you have anything in writing you could share with us, that would be great.
I would more have to go back and look. But I agree with her. If there is a need to create an interest on it, we can make that as part of our next recommendation on our yearly report, or even just something we submit to administration.
Well, and I'm looking 3 years down the road, right? This is a 3-year contract. And in 3 years, is it going to go up again? Because the county, that was a hard pill for the county to swallow this last time. And I can't imagine that the pill will be easier to swallow when it's bigger. Right.
I can tell you, and it's no secret, that, you know, the county doesn't want to continue to necessarily support those kinds of increases.
Yeah.
So staff will be directed to come up with alternatives.
Right.
And if that means, you know, limiting intake or limiting service, you know, that requires a code change, we're not doing cats anymore, we're going to become dog services County.
But this number,
right? I mean, that's the direction we'll go in.
Or expand and create more interest in the free ride home program. So you can bypass. And the Humane Society representative was in favor of that. If you can get people to take directly home, that would eliminate hours as well.
To your point or question, I was just wondering, technically, since a lot of those animals are microchipped when they are adopted out by Humane Society, how could we get the data so that we can see how many
and some of the things that I'm looking at right now, and you know, in just some of the research and things that I'm bumping into, I look at like, hey, this is a valuable piece of information, depending on what the county wants to do moving forward, right? It's like there are practical day-to-day happenings with the stray population, whether it's happening at HSSW or wherever. Wherever those animals land, there are valuable numbers that the county could utilize to formulate plans and responses of like, okay, if we're talking about like 2,000 strays a year, right? And 80% of those are cats, okay? So being able to drill down into that problem solving without having to create sort of a PR nightmare of like, sorry, no more cat care, you know, it'll be more like, wow. I think that there's, you know, we're looking for solutions.
Well, it's,
you
no, know. More, it's no more counties, but no more taxpayer paid county. Cat care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It is your county animal control department
can't afford this anymore.
It's the general fund.
Yeah.
It is if you know, if the messaging out there could be that, you know, you as a taxpayer and responsible pet owner are paying for irresponsible pet owners, then that make you upset.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, okay, we're not gonna do that.
Yeah.
And it, all that means is that the responsible people are going to continue to be responsible, and the irresponsible people are going to continue to be irresponsible.
Yeah.
So how do you change that? You know, we get statistics. You've seen, probably seen a typical report that we get from the Humane Society that supports, you know, what they're bringing in, what animal control brings in. What the public brings in, and it is just for the county. And I also caution you that the Humane Society provides these services to every jurisdiction in this community, and the county is while it's the largest piece, it's not the only piece.
Right.
I don't have access to any of that information, right, because I don't.
Right.
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 So. You know,
well, and I think that something we have to just remember is that if there is an animal population in an area, it only comes about by a couple of ways. Their animals are either born here or they're brought here, right? That's it. That's the only way animals come here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have distribution centers, right? You have basically nonprofit entities of all sizes distributing those animals back out into the community. If they do that responsibly and in a balanced fashion, then your community doesn't go crazy. If they don't, then it does. And the biggest piece that we have missing in this county is we do not have an open admission shelter, right? We don't have an open admission shelter. And as long as we don't have that, we are always going to have these types of problems, because there isn't any place that someone can just say, you know what, I'm at my wit's end, I'm getting kicked out of my apartment, I've got this cat, I'm just going to let him go. I mean, what else am I going to do?
And he's not spayed or neutered. And,
right. And then, boom, now you have a whole colony. So, you know, so I think that we have more questions still than we do answers, but we're getting that there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the reason we're kind of going down this path with the bylaws was because when we started looking at the handbook, there were things in the handbook that were code, were in code. So we were like, okay, let's take a deep dive look at the bylaws and make sure if anything needs to change, we can get those changes presented. So we only have to come one time. Like, we're not like, oh, and hey, one little thing.
That is not good.
Right. Okay. So I would say item section one, I think we're good on that because that is clarified by this clause and how we get information. Section three, if we could just look at section three, I think that's kind of, let's see, the same. This, as far as who we assist, it's Will, William, with the five-year plan. That's who essentially he'll initiate that, but we will support that through research and such, because that came up of like, who do we assist?
You don't know.
Also, item A, I'm sorry, the advisory board shall review and just
continue. Did you get confirmation that that's But that's the fact that it is.
Yep, Donna informed me of that.
I wasn't sure in what we guessed.
I have a further question about a point of order. Did we decide to use the video as meeting minutes this time?
Yes. We didn't have any.
Thank you. I didn't see your response until I walked into the room, and then I realized I would volunteer to this one.
Yeah, I think that the development of a five-year comprehensive plan has never happened as far as I know. I don't know that ever existed.
Right.
And I think part of that was that the advisory board was perceived to be tasked with that. And I think big role.
Would it be useful? Do you feel like that would be a useful tool for your department to have a five-year? Because here's the thing, is if you don't feel it's useful and this is busy work, then we're going to say, let's eliminate that.
Because we have an annual report and goal.
So just for, comprehensive planning purposes, when you do long-range, long-term vision planning, it usually is 3 to 5 years out
right.
that you're trying to accomplish. I think it is valuable to focus on what's been done. So what does it look like?
Right.
Right? And so a really good example would be in 3 years when the contract is up, what does that look like?
Right. Right?
And what you are working on over the next 3 years, you are then prepared in that moment when it's about to, that you're ready to go with data or information or recommendations
right.
because you're planning for that 3 to 5 year plan.
Right.
A 5 year plan may be to increase animal control officer count by one or by two. Or, and how would you do that? You would have to raise revenue and
right.
have to, and that's going to be a long term plan because the county's really big on if you're going to raise revenue, I need to see that it's a stable form of revenue for about 3 years or
more. Okay. Right? Okay.
So I'm kind of going through the same thing in code enforcement with trying to create an abatement run. I made some changes right when I started, and I'm trying to show a stable revenue income each year. And so that I can say, look what we implemented. It's reliable. And it will continue to be reliable. And so it needs some money.
Okay.
Right? And so that's an example of something that may take 3 to 5 years to be able to have data to support
okay.
or not support.
Right. Right.
Right? It's similar to the project position that we have with facility licensing. It's 2-year project position. In that 2 years, I have to show that that's budget neutral.
And right. It can pay for itself. Right.
Right? So sure. That's a 2-year. So there's value that nothing happens in the county overnight. In fact, I would argue that it's a little slower going sometimes because of the nature of government and the processes and the budget processes and all of that thing. So I do think a 5-year plan is appropriate for a few things.
Okay.
So as I stated, we prepare to identify the needs and establish priorities for that next length of time.
Yeah, and I think working with the manager of the program, that's appropriate to identify what those are.
Right, because we wouldn't be able to move into a 5-year plan without talking and having in-depth discussions with
otherwise, it becomes your 5-year plan.
Right, and that's not.
And that's not what, that's not what you're here for. Yeah.
And that's going to establish your members like yourself.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and so you have to kind of keep that in mind that you are representing the advisory boarders to advise for here. You all have your own interests outside of that you may not be able to affect as much as you might like,
right.
Given the role that you're here in here. But that doesn't mean it doesn't mean that you don't gain effective knowledge, you don't make effective connections, you don't, because a lot of this stuff does overlap and right. cross with all sorts of other things.
Right.
For purposes of this board, you focus your energy on what you can affect for animal protection and control
okay.
and what that looks like. And sure. Spaying and neutering is you can't not argue that that is a positive that affects animal protection and control and budget and services and all the things. So you can make that connection there.
Yeah.
We're not going to give away free spay and neuter. We're not going to sponsor that. The county's not. We don't. That's not what we do.
Right.
But it's all. It's related.
Right. It's all related. Exactly. And it's It's like all the cogs together. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the last. So I think that we're good with the bylaws, except this one last bit, which is section four under membership. So I think that we were all in agreement in concept to move away from the category. Is that correct?
That's how I would agree that I was, as long as where we went to made logical sense to, because we've always had a diminished size board, and we created new criteria which inhibited someone from being on the board or volunteering. It's basically we're all volunteers. And I wasn't in favor of that. I can give you an example. I don't remember if it was Lori, I think it might have been one of you, proposed having board members from all the five districts of Clark County. If we've had half board for my entire term on the board, and I'm the longest on the board at this point, that would inhibit us from gaining volunteers. Half our board, if we went to that, would be already in competition with each other. We live near each other. I believe you live near another board member. I'm not sure what the other people.
Yeah, and that kind of
thing. So with that kind of thing,
keeping
in mind, I'm okay. Even if we just said, but if we proposed it, which wouldn't inhibit other people,
right.
Because I don't know anybody I can even recommend that lives on Mill Plain, south of Mill Plain, along the river, up before Cascade Park. That's a district, I believe.
Right.
So I don't want to inhibit, but we've had trouble getting members. So we had a language change, which would enhance volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in favor of that.
So I just I feel both ways about this, and I really encourage you to think about when this was created, what was it trying to be, and it was trying to again supporting animal control, supporting code language,
mm-hmm.
that has to do with the job that animal control does in all aspects, livestock. Cats, dogs,
mm-hmm.
Get to, well, what are some of the, what animals do we have in Clark County? What categories should be represented? What code in Title VIII and even in land use code does affect the animal population?
Right.
The fact that we have restrictions on kennels, or that we have facilities that are required to meet certain standards, or that, and so that's where you're like, oh, well, we need somebody who represents these different categories so that their interests are represented, because we do have code and law on the books that affect kennels, that affect equestrian facilities.
It's like why we sought Carol for our board.
Yeah.
Because yep. She had an equestrian experience and we had nobody.
Yep.
And I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I think the main thing, if we do keep the categories, we have to make it clearer that may work, right?
Yeah.
We may fill in
this. Well, yeah, I mean,
because it seems like it's expected that we fill these positions. And
then you have that expertise that reflects your
counsel. The idea is we must fill them, but if we can't, then we may go beyond. Because
right.
Otherwise we can just say, well, I'm on, I volunteer for this organization, and we can get.
Shall attempt to include.
Right.
When you do a press release and you say, I would like a veterinarian or a vet tech, and you don't get one, you have attempted to include it.
Correct.
So then it further says such interests may represent but are not limited to.
Mm-hmm.
So is there another category that, I don't know, is new?
Well, I think that, like, okay, so if we remove it, if we put it through the lens of the community, if we put out a call for a vet or a veterinarian, we may not get that person.
Right.
But there might be someone with, say, marketing background. or, you know, program development background that would love to apply, but they're not a veterinarian or a vet tech. So we could miss out on, we could miss out on people who have not so much what they have at home, but what they bring here.
Right.
Because there is, there's a lot of value to having a broad skill set of people on the board.
Yeah, I agree.
If you have love, if you love animals and you believe in animal protection, but you don't necessarily fit into one of these categories and you're willing to like show up and do work, go and do events and hand out little things and go give talks. That's, I feel like that's more valuable than representing the category, because in reality, it's like, if we only have half of the categories truly represented, then we're kind of still in the same boat where we don't have, we have people who like, okay, like Robert's here advocating for dogs and he has a dog. So he's part of, he's the dog category. But we weren't able to find anyone for facilities. So Lori's in that position, but she doesn't really know facilities and can't really advocate for that. So is it more beneficial for the board to just have people who have a love for animals, a respect for animal services and skills that can push programs forward?
So there's two points related to that. One is we want valuable members to join our board. So what we may be looking at is we don't have a nominating committee to go out and seek out people for the shall categories. And if we can't find somebody that says we shall attempt to meet these categories, then we should go out and search for them. If we go to the point, and I agree with you, one of the reasons why I voted for you to be on the board originally was because you go out in the community and try to get out interest for animals. At what point, though, does our board slowly shift away from a diverse background, is what the animal code law was, and shift to who we can find that would be leaning all towards, and I'm honestly, I'm an animal welfare person, but there I know people who want animal control to take care of animals because they don't want animals around their neighborhood. They don't want to see animals.
Right.
So we're at risk of shifting the board away from the intent of what they originally did. So maybe we create a nominating board to go out and find.
I just feel like if we have 10 categories and we have actual representatives on the board, that people that genuinely represent those categories, that's not necessarily going to equal a successful board.
Right.
Because they may just be people who have a dog and have a cat and I love animals, but no, I really can't go and do that. And I'm not interested in doing this. They fit it on paper, but they don't necessarily have a skill set that would help us move the needle.
Yeah, that's what your interview recommendation. You should be sussing out the people who want to do the work, but you should have a clear, you should be able to communicate a clear mission and role so that people know what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. And then you interview them and see who is willing to do the work that you want. You have to outline that.
Right.
And you make a recommendation.
Yeah. And you know, and these categories, they make the interview process really, really complicated. And that was one of the things that, like, I think that's where we started, is every interview process we've had has been really contentious. Mm-hmm. Because we're trying to fill categories
and
kind of
good people.
You know, kind of
missing out on a lot of really good people who can help this board.
I see both sides.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can make a recommendation. I think if it were me, I would try to make some concerted effort to increase your recruiting, the recruiting process. Because, you can send out a press release and nobody reads. You can know somebody who you think might be a good person that has categories and they apply. And then, just take them because, right? But if you have, and again, maybe this is something that you work on, a detailed recruiting plan to go out to figure out, go to the horse counts and you do a spiel and you say, we're looking for a facility owner And equestrian is the facility. You'd be happy to have an equestrian facility owner on the animal control advisory board.
Maybe have a temporary, when positions are open, the nominating committee to do that type of work. Because I think that then we could do, like you said, and see how candidates would keep the diversity of the board.
I try to think of this as what was the intent. And
then I think that was put into place about
20 years ago. And I don't think the intent was poorly thought. And I tend to look at it again going back to code. What do we have in the code that affects people who deal with animals? It's why there's the Humane Society's next issue.
We found when we had our little workshop, I presented probably 5 different organizations of language from other advisory boards.
Yeah.
Some in the state, some out of the state, that had some of them had the same thing, like the looking for that, those categories.
That's the easiest thing.
Right.
Work smarter, not harder.
Right. And some of the other ones had more like described more skill sets and commitments, right? Like, you know, committed to animal welfare and rights, that kind of thing, and then rolled it forward. So there were options, and I would say that, you know, so we're not digging in too far. We've got a couple of board members who aren't here. Carol's not here, but I would say that that needs further discussion, that we need further discussion on this. So we'll maybe schedule another little workshop to talk that through and figure out if, you know, if there needs to be any type of a code change. And then the other...
Specific to what kind of code change?
That would be a code change to the membership section.
Can I give just a thought to take, to think of? If we wanted to also, I think we could decide as a board to write down something that if we cannot fill a certain category by certain amount of months, that then we extend to another, like support the veterinarian, right? It's been years. Like we could say, if after 3 years we still haven't found someone, we'll go with some other category.
Or we could make it at large after.
Yeah, like there might
for be one term.
Yeah, yeah.
For one like, term.
Yeah, I mean, so that's something.
Renew it again for another 3 years. Whatever. But the point, I like what you said is, if you, I'm trying to look at the intent of what they were trying to do, and I'm in favor of a lot of stuff we did in the last 2 work sessions, but I'm really cautious about changing bylaws unless we have a great need, because we have to assume that the people who worked on this were multiple people over a long period of time who formatted it to the way they would hope that our county would live by.
The only thing that I would add to that is that this was done quite some time ago, and the movement has changed dramatically since then. The movement of animal welfare, in especially, you know, has changed dramatically. Like back then, when this was originally put into place, no kill wasn't a thing. Fostering wasn't a thing.
Right.
Like there's all these aspects that weren't a thing, right? So I think that while the original core intent, and it's still good, like this isn't, I'm not saying that this is a bad thing. It just makes it difficult. It makes it confusing for the public when they read it, because, you know, they're not going to zero in on that. Like, you'll try.
Yeah.
They're going to automatically go, like, these people represent these categories, so they must be experts in those categories, when in reality, they might not be associated with those categories in any way. So
to that point, mm-hmm. you either stick with them.
Right.
Right. Or you change
right. them. Yes, exactly.
You know, I'm going to go back to animal welfare may have changed, but I want you to not think this big. I want you to think in the shape of this, the county.
Well, even, I think county has changed.
Well, the county population, right? But that, who is involved, what makeup of animal folks are in the county? And they were trying to hit and make sure that they were representing anyone that could be affected by any of the codes that that Clark County has adopted that could affect them, because they have a right to, we want to hear from people that code change affects. Because if we don't, then we're making decisions in a vacuum.
Right.
Right? So if we want to...
Okay, so if there was a code, like let's say that, you know, at a code committee, you have, you know, I know that you only have a couple people on your committee now, but if the committee was bigger, right, and you were going after a certain piece of code, mm-hmm. would you look to say, Carol, would you say, hey, Carol, we really want you to drill down into this piece of code because it impacts livestock. What do you think of that?
That's like, what we've already done.
Right. So is that, what we want to continue to have that piece? Is that a useful piece for, you know, I have not seen the board utilized yet in that fashion where any one person brings a level of expertise to a specific piece of code and drives that through.
It doesn't. Remember, it's not necessarily that you bring, you may have an exposure. You may be a new farmer.
Okay.
With you're going to raise, I don't know, some special brand of sheep. Okay. And the county is like, you can't have more than 20 sheep on the property. We're thinking about a code change. You don't have to be an expert in that, but what you can do is you are a member of that community, right? So you have a connection. You know that if your sheep has a specific hoof problem, who you're going to go to maybe ask for that because you're connected.
Right.
Or so with in that example, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I got to get with my sheep friends and tell them what the county's proposing, because we're going to gather up and talk about it, and we're going to say this is a really good idea, or this is a really bad idea, or these were our recommendations. You don't have to do all of the work. And maybe they say, hey, can you help us buy X? Or, but really, that's what it is. It's there are topics and subjects that wrap their hands around everyone. And then there are sections of the code or interests out in the community that are just specific to horses or,
right,
or dogs,
right,
or whatever,
right,
right,
right.
And so I think if you look at it in that way, the categories make sense. They're not the end all be all, but it's really to represent that piece,
right.
Right.
Okay.
And not to come and act as an expert, but to be able to say, to be an advocate for that
type
of peak space in that space. So that if something were happening, or they want to make a change. Oh my gosh, I have a really good idea. Remember when Lori, what's her name? Wanted to do something with horses. And she's like, we need a minimum stable size, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and okay, let's talk about that. Let's, mm-hmm. what does that look like? Get your people together. Where's the research? Where's the other people that are doing it? Is it going to be a hard sell? Is it a soft sell? Is it am I going to say, no way, we're not going forward with that, because that'll never happen. Or I can't enforce that, right? Or, you know. Okay, well, if we're not going to change code, can we do some like education or some awareness campaign, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
And as a board, we can all participate in any kind of an awareness campaign for any group of people, mm-hmm. because we support all animals, right?
Right.
So look at it in that way.
Okay.
I also think that it provides some level of look, we're trying to do this, and if we can't get somebody, but we need bodies, then we tried. And then, you know, there's nothing that prohibits the board from, if we decide that we want to make a certain change to code that only affects horses, and we don't have anybody on the board that represents the equestrian because we have an alpaca farmer,
mm-hmm.
then there's nothing that prohibits this board from obviously reaching out to the Horse Council and saying, we have this, this is a proposal that's going.
Right. So if we can solve problems along those lines, then how important are the categories? Right. It's. I mean, my.
No. Let me back up and say that it gives you some credibility to say that that they're representative, right? So that no one can come back and say
they're making decisions
for me.
For me, and they're not. They didn't even know me. You know.
Or my business, or my, you know, or my niche. I mean, it you know, there again, there's not the perfect answer here, and I see both sides. I would caution that you try and explore trying a little harder, maybe to get the categories filled, mm-hmm. and if you don't, have a backup plan that would allow you to fill positions. But you try.
Right. And I think that the language in here currently allows for that, right? Yeah. That little, like, you shall try, right?
Yeah.
You try.
Yeah.
We tried, okay, but we didn't. So then we got other people. I think that if we stay with it, just emphasizing that in some way, even with an asterisk. So when people read it, mm-hmm. like the average public, they read it and then they're able to see that there's just more clarification. I don't know what that does to our interview process yet, but again, I think that it just, let's have some discussion. Let's do an event. Let's do a little work.
And I'd like to caution us because Donna, you weren't in our meetings, but
no,
the problem lies in the potential conflict because these members want this person, these members want that person. And so if we can get around that at one particular point of time, we find that we can just say, oh, we tried and we don't want this person, even though they might be totally qualified, just because there might be a situation where some candidates are wanted by some members and some candidates by other members. So I'm cautious about changing the rules just to make what we want in the short term. We're a short-term blip in the history of our county. And I think we should consider that before we just say, I want to change the rules so we can get who we want in a friend of mine or somebody who I have more preference
for. Well, wait a second. That's not what I've ever suggested. That's not what we were suggesting.
I just want to not have conflict related to selecting our members. I'd like to see it in a way that we all agree things are set in a certain way so that we don't have a conflict for. And we've been waiting for members who applied for 3-4 months now, or even one of them was like last July. So I just want to see a process that is that kind of coincides with what you were saying. But you can look at both sides.
You can, and I appreciate, because what I hear when I hear that, to be honest, is I want the ability to expand the pool of people, right? Hear it in terms of I want to pick who I want. I want to be able to expand the pool of available candidates. I think you resolve potential issues with selection by having a process that you follow. And you know, I have to follow a process when I interview applicants, and I have to have a panel, and I have to have somebody outside of my organization as an extra person to participate. I have to use a scale of points. I have to use anchors. I have to identify what I want in a candidate and to be able to prove that that was a successful answer, right? And then I have to give them a score. And so if I have 10 anchors to a question and somebody got 5 of them and somebody else got 8 of them, then the person who got 8 of those anchors or hit 8 of those anchors can get a higher score on that question. So there's a process. And then it allows me to give everybody a score. And then if I've got people that are close, I do another interview. And I ask different questions. And I have a different panel. And so I get there in a way that is structured and process-oriented. And that's to be able to you know, pick the best person and defend what I did, the decision that I made. So I would encourage trying to address that issue in a different, in a particular way.
Right, you know, and because if we could come up with an agreeable process, then there is no need to change the categories, because the categories, we can just work through the categories because we have a solid interview process.
And if you don't find somebody, we can actively search, like I said, a committee that goes out and finds candidates.
Right.
Or like a
nomination
committee.
Yeah.
I do want to thank you, Donna, because it was the process of how things were followed or not followed in our last thing, and not clear enough in terms of how the process would work that was causing conflict for me personally. Okay.
And I think I put in an email that everybody saw that was on it, that, you know, that wasn't the way things were done. And I made a suggestion that we now had more candidates than we had positions to fill. So how would you like to do that? And my recommendation was, you interview them, right? And so maybe that should have been more thought out at that time. It worked the first time, it didn't work the second time, right? It may work the third time, it may not. But if you have a clear process in place to avoid any confusion, it will.
And that, you know, so maybe that's the first conversation that we have, is that we determine, we agree on a process,
mm-hmm.
and then we look at if there's a need for a change in the membership structure. Okay, so the last thing that I wanted to discuss in relation to the bylaws is section 4, and it's the last paragraph of that section. One member of the organization holding the contract for provision of animal control services currently held by the Humane Society shall also serve as an ex officio non-voting member. Okay. Couple of things, and this is only if we do intend to change the bylaws. I don't think that this should change. If there's other changes that we're going to take to the county, I thought it would be prudent to just strike reference to a specific organization, only because if the organization changes, then we'd have to do a bylaws change at that time. So I think there's a generic way to reference whatever organization holds that position would be sufficient. The other thing I'd like to talk about is the benefit of having a representative from the Humane Society as an ex officio member. If we are essentially forwarding questions, if we can't present questions to that representative in a meeting, we're sending them to you, which is fine. That's all fine. What is the purpose of them being part of this board? I'm not trying to lean one way or the other. The only thing that I would say is that, you know, that I don't know if there is, I know that Lori mentioned that she doesn't necessarily feel comfortable speaking freely about some of the things and, you know, concerns that she has about the Humane Society because a representative of the Humane Society is here. I don't know if other members will feel that way moving forward. We have other people that are going to be coming onto the board. So, and that's aside, but what is the benefit? If there's no benefit of her being, or her, just anyone from the organization being here, then...
Well, I can address your question. They have the option to ask me a question. We ask them during our board meeting, and I've done 2 terms on the board. So if they don't want to address it, they can have us refer it to the administration to talk with them directly. I don't feel that if a board member is uncomfortable talking in front of somebody like that, there's nothing that we should be able to discuss anything in front of the public on the cameras, or a member of the ex officio member from the Humane Society. We shouldn't be in a situation where we're uncomfortable. If you're uncomfortable, bring up the issue, let them address it, or address it through Donna's office and have them deal with it. We're adults. We should be able to talk about every issue, about the issues related to our advisory board here. And if you're uncomfortable, I'd like to help you. I'm more than happy to address issues or have them say, hey, this is an issue. Because there shouldn't be anything we should have to be not talking to or hiding from them, not talking about in front of them. That's really, it's kind of nefarious way of thinking. And if you feel that way, I understand and I want to back you up. We should just present what that would be and let them.
But there isn't, as far as I understand, there isn't anything that we can ask them at this point. We have just any questions that we have go through the county at this point. And mind you, I don't know if Jen loves being at these meetings, if the representative from the Humane Society loves being here. So I'm asking just in general, is there a benefit for them to be in this room? Because again, like you're right, there's information that we can get. We have an avenue to get it through the county. You know, yes, again, if people are uncomfortable, there's a way to deal with that. But is there a benefit to having this person in the room with us for these meetings? You know, they're not participating in our work sessions. They're invited, but they're not participating.
But you see, that's an extraordinary situation. There were emails sent out to them saying, you're not invited. We don't want to talk in front of you. It was insulting. And I addressed that.
We're adults.
But we were adults. And I addressed it multiple times that they had the right to be at every committee meeting, every work session, and in this meeting here. No one listened to me. So finally, I went to administration and I had William say, yes, what Robert said is, he didn't say, I mind it, but that is true. They have the right to be in those things. It was insulting to have to sit there and listen to what was said about them, like they're the enemy. And that just shouldn't go on. If there's a problem, we want to address it. Because we're adults in the same room, we should be able to address any issue. And if they're doing something wrong, they should have to discuss it. You should say, this is a problem. We can talk about it right now in the board meeting. We can talk about it with administration, or we can have a work session. But we shouldn't have anything that shouldn't be allowed to be talked about in front of anybody. Everybody in the world can watch us right now. So I'd like to see it stay that way. And there could be not as many good reasons for having them on the board as perceived bad reasons from members' perspectives. But again, we should be able to discuss every last issue. And if there's a problem that our administration sees by asking them a question, and they want to meet with them on the county to vendor discussion, then that's our county's decision. So I see a value. So in response, I see a value having them there. I don't care if it's one particular person from the Humane Society or another that they represent. If they choose not to go to a work session after they've been blasted in emails about it, I was embarrassed for her. I wrote email after email saying, they have the right to be at, you got my emails. She had the right to be in our work session. She had the right. So did William.
And at the point when it was stated to me that she did have the right to be included in all the communications, she'd been included in every.
Right. Not what I said. 3 months after I said it in a meeting, then I got William to say it in our meeting, and then you accepted.
Okay, but so been resolved now. So
right. So there's the point I'm trying to say is. You may have mentioned that she doesn't attend our sessions. She doesn't attend our work session. I wouldn't want to attend somewhere.
And that's fine. And all I'm saying is that there has been an avenue presented to this board of how we seek information related to the Humane Society. So my only question is if we cannot address the representative from the Humane Society directly at our board meetings, we do it through the county entity. What is the purpose of them being here?
Well, I just stated she answers our questions and she tries to get back to us. And if she can't or won't, then we can go to the county because William said that we go to him or Donna if there's something we really want that we can't get from the representative. It was clearly stated.
And we can try. There's a board together. We can try. Unfortunately, I think that this contract negotiation process opened up some things that caused some rifts because they felt a need to be protective of information, thought that maybe information was being used in some sort of negative way. Or now, don't get me wrong, I think that it would be nice to get some of the information that was being asked. I know William came in as a new person and wanted a bunch of things because he didn't want a shelter. I think they were like, that's none of your business. And then it's paranoia, right? It's like, what do we want back? And there was a, we've never been through like contract negotiations, this board, this group of people. And it was contentious because it was such a huge cost increase. I mean, I still have questions about, again, you know, I didn't realize they were charging us for the whole life pet from the time it came to the shelter to the time it left, whether it was 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 years. And that was news to me, because to me, the county shouldn't be paying anything past the straighthold.
So I think related to what you're saying is the reason why they did that, in my opinion, I don't know the circumstances, but we kept pushing no kill, open acceptance, which I totally agree with. I don't want any animal killed unless it's medically impossible to keep them, you know, reasonably alive. And I think they should take any animal. And I think we all agreed with hoping to do that. Maybe that's the way that came about. But we had really great communication with them until last summer. Yep. And honestly,
that's when
one of our members filed a complaint with the county about them because they didn't respond to all the questions, then they don't want to answer our calls. So we damaged our relationship.
By asking questions?
No, by filing the complaint with the counties, is what I understand. But what I'm trying to say is I see value on the person on the board. Same thing as having you and William. Because without you here, we don't always get the results. It gets to be too much of a...
And all I'm saying is that if we're not able to ask questions to the representative of Humane Society, then them being on the board...
But we are. We've seen that three times.
That's what I'm trying to... The point I'm trying to...
We are allowed to ask questions, and if they want to respond...
To ask her
if she's in the meeting, we can ask her permission.
You can ask her whatever she wants. The representative can choose whether to answer.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, that's great.
And that's not
what I understood. I understood that we were not able, that any questions that we had needed to be forwarded to the county, and you guys would then get that.
If you want, I can email her after this and see if we want to just ask. According to the contract, it said this. Can you confirm whether or not?
Well, she already did that in your last meeting.
I know.
Glad to answer any questions you have. And then we went further and said with William, if there's something they aren't getting back to us about, whether it's at our meeting we ask, or if we email them the mask, how do we go about it? He says, forward them to us, and we will approach it in that way. And that's already happened.
I guess I would be more interested. What information is being requested and why? And is it relevant?
Yeah. And the only reason I have gone down this path is because of that one line in the contract that said that all information will be kept confidential. So again, that says to me, we cannot get information.
Right.
So, okay.
Because it's such a general, terminology in there. I mean, they could say that. So they could say,
sorry, we don't have to answer your questions.
And that may very well have been intentional. I don't know. What I would hope is when you have a good relationship built on a mutual understanding and trust, then those issues they don't exist.
Yeah, see, before last summer, I could call or email anybody and they just get back to me. And they say, I don't know that information, but I can give it back to the animal control at a later time.
The contract is signed and there's less paranoia about sharing information because maybe they thought it would be used against them in some way. I don't know. It was an interesting process and, when that significant amount of increase is involved and the county is struggling to move that struggle to make their budget. What are we paying for, and what are we getting for?
I agree. Yeah.
Have that information.
One of the things that I wanted to find out is what they're saying in the contract. Is it actually moved up at the shelter?
Oh, and I don't.
That's a question I want to ask.
Like, well, isn't there the example with the dogs getting exercised?
But what you're asking them is, are you in breach of contract? And I just want you to
interesting.
I want you to think about it in that way, because that is really what you're implying. Right? So be careful.
I don't see the problem starting about the contract.
Yeah.
I see the problem starting with a breakdown of communication where they started getting defensive back in May, early June last year. And so before that, I could just call, hey, or I could email, request this information. Since that time, they've been like, well, okay. Because I think they took it as whatever happened in terms, I wasn't in the conversations that occurred, but I did get follow-up emails about what was happening. I think they take it as, you're accusing us of breach of contract. You're trying to open our drawers and look in our files. That's not your business as an advisory board.
I would say when I say breach of contract, when you ask questions like, what are you doing? It's like, that's required in the contract. You're
showing me the language.
Yeah, that's all. And so, that's one thing. I think that the other thing with regard to we want to look in your files, we have an obligation to explain to the public what we're paying for, and to justify the expense. It's the Humane Society's job to justify that expense, and then for me to be able to explain what that expense is. And the public and the counselors get to decide whether they want to spend the money that way. I don't care. Either give me the budget to pay the bill, or tell them I have to make changes to be able to pay bills. I would love all the money in the world to do all the things. But I also, there's a responsibility to be able to say, this is how much it costs, to a degree that satisfies the people that look at it, to be able to explain. And so I think that's where the hang up was.
So I think we need to repair the relationship, communication relationship with them. Having somebody in
our to sign, I think they were afraid that for some reason what were we going to do? And now that we're in a 3-year contract, it shouldn't be an issue with, being able to work on other things. I can tell you that if we didn't get information during that negotiation process to get to the point of signing the contract, we're not going to get it now.
I just worry about friends. That's all.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah, they nice and they have a log of animal exercise.
They should have a log.
Or that's important, like which animals didn't get it.
They should have a log of what animal went out, when it went out, what exercise was given, who took it out, and how much time it spent.
At least the reverse.
Yeah.
Animals that did not get, because if they're short staff, for example, like your example, then they may not have it may be more convenient to go, this animal wasn't given an opportunity for this type of exercise, and we want to prioritize it for another day, and we can keep that wallet.
They do it in their adoption pods. They keep records of everything, every animal who went out, what time they went out, they were walked for how long, they went in the yard, they, they did their business. That's all on record. And
so hopefully now we have.
So why can't it be the same in the spring?
So we should ask, if they send a representative, we should ask them, hey, can you give us that information?
That's
just so we can see. But it's compliance of contract, and that's a different thing.
But it is compliance of contract.
Is there a professional licensing organization for Humane Society that do? You know how DFHS does inspections of adult family homes?
Yes, there is.
Okay, so that is not my role. I am not going to check to see whether they're walking the shit out.
But you just know that your contract county is paying for that service.
That's right.
Right. You're paying for vaccines.
And until I have a reason to believe that it's not happening, I have to assume that it's.
So you would present information for
right?
We advise the board.
So.
Advises you, so we have that information and we're aware of it, then you can deal with it, right? We want to gather that, like, get Lori's information. You don't believe that's happening.
And
don't necessarily believe it. I would just like to make sure it's happening. That's all.
Because if you were
referenced in a contract and code is referenced in a contract about that.
Okay, so if we use the idea that Donna presented earlier, the process, perhaps we could have a committee or a member who with our board approves it. We talk about it on the next session or a work session and say, hey, we'd like to have an ongoing good relationship communication. We'd like a representative from our board to give a tour and show us the kind of exercise you give dogs and what kind of records. And you can ask for that. There's nothing wrong with asking.
I don't need to see it. All I want to do is
without seeing it. In a sense, you're seeing the records.
So I don't have to go down there and see. I mean, she could just give me copies of
them. She could do that too. You can ask.
Would you like to email her?
Yes.
For it?
I can, sure.
And let's see what happens. I think at this point, we just wanted to, we want to try and.
Provided, is that okay to email Jen questions?
I think you can ask for whatever you want. But I think that whether or not they agree that it's within their scope is a determination they're going to make. And then you're left with, is it?
And I don't know if that determination's changed from their last work session. That determination was that they did not have to provide us with any information.
Right. Yeah. But I feel like when Jen is here, right, we obviously talk with each other. So I would say, I would feel comfortable asking her a question. And if she says no, then it goes through the official,
if you work with us advisory board and it wasn't, like, even if, let's just pretend it's not in the contract, right? Let's pretend it's not in the contract. It's a requirement, probably. It's probably it's shelter practice, similar, you have to provide enrichment. I don't know. I'm not a shelter person.
Typically, strays do not get, they don't get
anything.
That's usually what happens. But when someone says that they offer enrichment, when an organization says we offer enrichment, but they actually don't, it's because they want it to look good. They want it to look like you're getting a good bang for your buck, right?
Maybe we
weren't able to provide, none of my questions prior to the contract being signed, just basic things of like, how much are you billing the county for vaccines? And what vaccines are you providing, right? Those kinds of things are relevant. They're relevant to the financial bottom line of the county. Then, just in the capacity that I operate in with volunteering with a small rescue, I've seen paperwork, right, that comes out that shows an animal that started out as a stray and then was not given any medical care of any kind and went out to a home and, trying to find the rabies shot and everything. And they're like, oh, we don't do that. Or we don't. So just enough disconnects, just enough like, well, they said that, but they do this and they said this, but they did that. Just enough to raise a few questions. Right. And ideally, when those questions get forwarded over, they're benign questions. They're questions that shouldn't matter unless there's something that matters.
So it sounds like, and I would totally agree with what Sandra said about having someone ask. It sounds like you're concerned about compliance, what they're doing, and there's way to check on that. And I have no problem with anyone asking. If you want to email, right now Jennifer is the representative, so if you want to email Jennifer or ask her at an next meeting, I'm fully accepted that. I didn't know that you say that they don't exercise or enrich strays. maybe that's a proposal we can make as a board that we'd like to see that included. Now, I don't know if that would wait 3 years for the next contract, but at least
I'm talking about now.
Okay, so then it's contract compliance. Okay, and I'm totally in favor of animals. I would hate to see an animal sit in a cage and have no walk outside, walk around, human interaction. And I'm an animal lover like the rest of you. I think we just have to formulate questions that we want to give to them and say, we have a concern. If you have a concern, we should say why we have a concern. And if it's just interest, we should say, this is not a concern, this is an interest. And then we seek the information. And I'm in favor of that.
Okay, so I think that when we're looking at the bylaws, we're going to need another work session to just talk through the membership stuff. And again, I would say that if we end up sticking with the categories and just sticking with the bylaws as they are, then we'll be able to finish the handbook very quickly, and we will just move on. Okay.
I've given them a copy of the handbook after we revised it.
We haven't revised it yet.
No, I'm just from last work session.
No, so that's not done. It's not done because we needed to discuss the bylaws because so much of what's in the handbook is also in the bylaws.
The reason for my question is if we have progressed it, maybe we can seek her advice on what she thought.
Yeah, I would say, after we have one more conversation about the bylaws to see if our member section changes, then absolutely, I think we have a good solid draft.
Have you thought about also just a suggestion sweep on here, but not changing some of the categories that to an at-large member so that you can get
That's an engineer. It's just like changing some of them. Okay. Just
one or two instead of them being specific, make them at large, and then you're able to then get a little bit broader of the scope or bigger and at large members. I mean, there's different things.
That's a really good idea, because then if we did that at large stuff, we could then pull in a description of the skill set that would be really supportive on the board. And but then from the outside looking in, the community would look and feel that they are represented, that the different factions are represented.
So I kind of like Saunders' idea before, because it gives me the feeling that we're back in the court sort of thing. To push, I have several friends who said, if I ever need somebody to be on the board, they would consider looking at it. I can pack it with all my friends, and then we steer it towards an agenda. All right? You would never know they're my friends. I would just say, don't tell them you know me, whatever. The point is, I would like to see us look at your suggestion that we did before, and we can talk about that in the next work session.
Okay. So. So I guess the next one's me as well, with just an update on the Friends Of. Okay, so we had a work session for the Friends Of, and it went really well. We talked about a whole bunch of things. I sent over an email to William, and I have not heard back from him yet, of getting like a wish list and just getting some feedback from him on like social media. And if I guess probably the most important thing at this point that Donna, you might be able to chime in on, is there a specific list of events that the nonprofit, that Animal Control, likes to attend? Because what we'll do is the Friends Of group will coordinate, so we're not duplicating the different events. So is there a certain number of events that you guys automatically do already?
So I will tell you that it was just last year that we started doing two events.
Oh, okay.
So we weren't doing any before that because we were on fire.
Okay.
We started doing the Humane Society's walk.
I was at that one.
That one, and then there is an event at the Dakota Dog Park that
is it the water one? There's a lot.
I don't
know. Dakota Dog Park.
It's at the Dakota Dog Park. It's I can't remember who sponsors that event. A dog park.
Okay. I'll check.
And we brought our vehicle and all our contraptions for the kids. And we did that event. So those were the two that we increased our, you know, exposure to.
Okay.
So I don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know of any specific events.
Okay.
I don't have my pulse on the all of the animal events that happen. Well, I'm sure there's lots of them. Those are the two that we've gone to. This will be the second, I think it's June.
Dakota Park is June, okay.
I think because I remember I had dentistry.
Oh,
so they went the next day.
And they just have 7 weeks in May. Okay, good enough. That's really helpful. Okay.
And then outside of that, we're just animal control is trying to be represented at neighborhood association to talk about our program and licensing like that. So that's not the same. Those are so if there are more, great. Let's get a list and we have to be fairly choosy, especially if they're happening in the summertime because we're busy.
Well, that's why the Friends of group is going to take up that role.
And let us know because I think it's really important for our officers to have the opportunities to be involved because they find reward in that.
Yes.
They don't have to. It's not required.
Should now would that request come to you or William? Because I assume it has an impact on
cost. So it would go through William. I would suggest you copy me on anything that would be helpful.
Okay.
William still doesn't know what he doesn't know, and I can help him navigate some things with my experience if I know about them.
Okay.
To save him some time. Or point him in the right direction.
Okay.
It's more about efficiency. We would have to, for example, we do fire events, and I say, hey, if I can't, as a manager with labor law, I can't say you have to take comp time instead of overtime. I would love for you to take comp time because that's less of an impact to my budget. But if you want overtime, then the law says I'll pay you overtime.
Okay.
So we offer, hey, if you do comp time, great. If not, if you want to attend, sometimes what we say is we don't have the budget, we can't afford it, we can't do it for everybody, therefore it's not mandatory.
Okay.
So if you're not going to do comp time, you can't go. So we can do that. So yes, there is an implication, and we like to be aware of those things. But I do think it's important to have the opportunity because a lot of, like I said, officers find that rewarding.
And it was nice seeing the people interact, the officers, and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So the next question is a wish list. We would love to have a wish list on the website. On the Friends of website of things that the department needs, the officers need, a wish list of anything to where members of the public could look at it and buy those things. So, but we need to know. So there's that. So you don't have to give them that now, but just so you know.
I think I've given you a couple of ideas.
Yes, exactly. And then let's see. We're going to need to pull together some type of a social media plan of how we support the department through social media. Whether it's, once a week, I think Sandra, you recommended something like once a week, the officers like send over stories and pictures and then the Friends of group puts those out. That way it doesn't turn into this conflict where the department has social media, they're not supposed to, right? It's the Friends of social media, but they're contributing to it in some way.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, I put that over to William to say, like, how would you do that? So I don't know if that's feedback that we're going to need. Would it be, okay, the next thing would be, is it valuable or necessary for the Friends of group to have any type of an MOU with the county in any fashion. I mean, and I don't say that so much from the side of the Friends of, because the Friends of group is going to be really laser focused, really specific agenda. But the county might feel better, right, if they understand those parameters.
Do we know of any other advisory board that has a shoot-off or like this?
There are Friends of groups that have MOUs with county entities, but it's usually not an offshoot of an advisory board. And as soon as the Friends of group is up and going, we're in the process of recruiting other board members. We've already got...
It would be independent. It's really not a non-profit.
Right. It's independent. Right. Mm-hmm. And, exactly.
So what do these MOUs address?
They just address sort of like... it basically just lays out things like, This is what we're going to do. We're going to do some events and we're going to promote licensing in the language and theme and structure that is already being done by the county. It just sort of gives documents continuity of information. So it's a really light document. It's because it's light stuff that's happening. And it's also kind of like the county would then know that the organization isn't going to go off on some crazy tangent that could impact the county in a negative way. So
there is no requirement as an individual to donate to the county, correct?
You could. There are actually parameters outlined in Title 8 for donations.
Sure.
So you can follow it. Yeah. So it could be an individual, it could be a corporation, it could be whatever.
Okay, so to respond to her request, essentially anyone, as long as they're following that code, can donate money, items. It's not a... Because we don't have a working relationship with an MOE with any other organization in town, even if... Let's say they were super successful and they did all kinds of wonderful things. It's really not an entity of the county. It's a private or nonprofit private.
It is, but I think there's probably some parameters around accepting money.
Yeah, that's another question that we have to figure out.
That's what we wanted.
Obviously, we don't want to accept a legal fund.
Right.
Change the legal.
Sure. See, that's the thing, is that laying that out in an MOU that says that, the county, because... What I'm thinking about in the MOU is the county going to be like, what are they doing over there? What are those animal people doing over there? I don't want them to feel that way. I think it's important that they have confidence in that effort. And if that and if you feel an MOU would be beneficial.
Yeah, and this is new territory, so I guess
why don't we generate a draft? And, you know, we'll talk it through at the Friends of meeting. We'll generate a draft, send it over. And if you're like, hey, yeah, I see where you're going.
And then I would ask my attorney.
Yeah, and then you're like, this isn't a draft. It's not necessary. If you're like, no, let's not even send it. Yeah.
So with an MOU, then the county becomes, if they ran an advertisement that that the county didn't like, is the county liable for that?
We wouldn't do that.
If you have an MOU. I have examples. For example, you could have a wording of something that could be interpreted differently. I think William said something in the meeting we had recently. I was wondering how the county looks at legally having an MOU with one organization that they don't have control of because it's an independent. It's all a legality thing. I see your point. Where's the legality of it? Because it's not like a branch of our government. It's not a branch. It's a nonprofit who's working in our favor, just like an individual who donates. So I guess the idea is, what is the relationship and how is that legally entwining the county with a small nonprofit?
I'll pull some other examples of MOU, send them over. If you feel there's value in the county, we can move forward. If you don't feel there's any value with it, whatever.
Are there any other MOUs with any other nonprofit in the county, but in animals?
I can't answer that. I'm not aware of any. Are there any other organizations
you're in the county? I think there are.
Probably, maybe. We have an MOU.
with West Vet for after hours veterinary care. It's not a contract, it's an understanding, because we're like, hey, if you can provide this, we can only pay up to this amount of money. And it's for stabilizing care and it's no longer here, it's on a contract because we're limiting what we can spend. So we didn't go out for a contract, we didn't go out for a bid, and we're the only ones that were willing to provide that. And we're lucky that they're there. Now we have a very 24-hour vets now because we have
that
right? And you know, they do a lot of restraints, like they want to say, oh, we'll pay no.
Right.
So, you know, are we at a point where we have to do some sort of approval to us that we haven't capped our costs because we because what happens is people can't afford to treat their animals, and if their animal has an emergency all night, they don't want to say it's a stray.
Yeah.
And there's just that.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with you presenting an idea for them to look at.
Again, it's not me. It's really, people can operate in different odds. And if something were to go sideways, and we would disavow. Don't support that. That's not our message. Would it be nice to have, I don't know, maybe even a moving one of them say, you shall not do this, or you cannot do this,
or you will not,
not do this.
It's money from legal sources.
We don't want drug money.
So there's potential on other board members on the so it's important to me that we have a delineation of separating our board from the work of the nonprofit that we might accept funds from. But that was part of the original discussion of why there might be an MOU related to, we have members who are a part of those nonprofits, but they're also on our board. So that was something I wanted to bring up for your consideration.
A lot of people that are passionate about a cause, that are on several boards related to that cause, because they have money to offer or expertise to offer or interest in energy or whatever.
Lives and twice.
I don't find that at all unusual. It happens in a lot of different cases. So, we may have a person on this board that's on 500 animal welfare
boards. So, I see a problem with people being on multiple boards. My family, my stepmother's on several. My question is, I want to make sure that our discussion here remains about our work here and in the future. Once we delineate where we are with working with the nonprofits, that we keep our discussion here about that.
Well, and maybe in the future, it's really that the reason why this was able to come about was because we speak at the advisory board of the county, talks about our challenges, and somebody in this group saw a need to maybe, we can help you with some of those challenges that you can as an advisory board member, and we're going to create this over here. And maybe what needs to happen at this point, right, is that I don't know that this is an appropriate place to talk about friends of.
No, you know what I mean? Right. This isn't a place to work out what the problems for friends of. This is me simply introducing the new organization and the progress that we've made, the questions that we have that do relate to the county.
Because you can do really great work. I mean, and as an independent organization, you can provide a lot of funding, for example, things you might need.
And I don't mind that, I think it's totally appropriate, just like the Humane Society prepares a report, just like I prepare a report. If there are other animal welfare organizations that have an interest or impact, can come to our committee
and give a report. It's
and the friends of the friends of group, I think that's one of the things they feel would be beneficial is to come and let you guys know what's going on. Let this board, and as soon as the board, we're just about past sort of the structure component, and then Lori, myself, and Jen from Furry Friends, who's on that board, if she ends up joining this board, we are not going to be on that board anymore. That's why we're getting everything set up in a way that's nice and buttoned up and heading in a different direction. And then they, and then someone other than us will be sending over status reports over here. And then the only other thing that came up at the work session that we had was we don't know, we need to know how to give you things, right? Okay, so let's say that we have on our wish list a
new truck.
What's that? Right.
Yeah.
A new truck, right? Okay. And somebody wants to donate that. What do we do? Like, do we have them, and we just need to know how do we legally transfer property to you? And then how would you like money transferred to you? Because I don't want to, is it going to make you really happy if I send you $10 every day? Right. Or would you rather at the end of the month I send you $500, right? Or would you say, could you please send it every 3 months? Whatever it is, we just need to know what those parameters are so we can set them up.
Thank you very much. And then the last little bullet point. Oh no, there's two more. Sorry. First one was how can we increase our chances of meeting with the council and the manager? So it's been a couple of months since I've requested if the county manager and the council could meet with us, however they'd like, if it's like a work session or one-on-ones or however they can do it without making it too complicated for them. And I know I was recommended to keep following up. So I'll continue that, but I just wanted to see if anybody has any idea.
Okay. One thing, I'd like to ask you, what are you wanting from them?
I would like for them to get to meet us, and that way they can hear our motivation, they can hear what we want to work on, and that they can also give us feedback on that strategy.
Okay. So what I would say we do is the next public board meeting, a few of us go, right? To the open meeting, because there's always other business. Like there's like a section where you can get up and talk about anything. It's really interesting, some of the things that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And just go and stand up and give a presentation to them. You get 3 minutes, and each of us, whoever goes, we could each take a piece of something and say, building on that, we would like to share this, and that because we're giving them good information, right? We're not there to say, you're doing bad things, we don't like you. We're here to just say, hey, we're really cooking over here, and we're doing great stuff. And I go with you. I would absolutely go with you.
But I ain't talking.
because that might be a way for them, because, again, maybe coming out of a contentious session with the contract
I actually agree, and that would have been my suggestion, is to go to the public comment section of the public hearing and just introduce yourself and talk about what you are passionate about, what you're working on, and that you would like an opportunity to meet with them to see what it is that they would like you to do. They're either going to take you up on it or not, I think I will tell you that the council is very busy, and they have to, I have to schedule an October work session now. Most of them have full-time jobs, right? So they're doing this, right? I'm just one department in however many departments there are in the county. And so imagine that every department needs a piece of them to discuss something. It's part of the reason why code changes haven't been provided. It's, you know, we just did the work session for fireworks for 2024, May 7th.
Oh, wow.
For 2024.
Oh,
okay. Because it was put on the schedule, moved again, and moved again. And it's been but budget time is in, depending on the environment in whatever's happening in whatever department, whether that's legislative or whether it's emergency or whether it's state mandated code changes that we have to deal with at that time, because the state just passed in the legislature something that goes into effect on July 15th, mm-hmm. right? Or whenever, right? So it is a moving target all the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be talking about 2024 fireworks right before 2025 fireworks. So I've requested to be on the September work session for 2025 fireworks. And I hope I get there, right? I hope I'm not finding myself talking about 2025 fireworks in 2026. So it's just an example. It's just really difficult. So public comment is actually a really great idea, because you get your 3 minutes.
You get your three, and I'll, like I said, I'll come. We can see all of the board members, and we could each take a peek if there's a topic that we feel that they would really enjoy hearing about or might be relevant for them. We could each take a piece. And give a little 3-minute presentation. That way they see our faces. They see our enthusiasm. They see that we're like here and we're working and we're doing things.
Yeah. And maybe you do 1 or 2 people, and then you come back and do 3 weeks.
I do.
Yeah. That's an option. And then, at that point that you've made that commitment to come and see a volunteer, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm not even going to hold them. Hey, Rebecca, can you put that on my schedule?
Yeah.
And meeting with them one-on-one is probably also easier than they can't meet together at the same time. Yeah. So trying to individually get on, sending them an individual.
I was able to get two of them and then a single.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two I was never able to get.
And maybe they're just not interested. That's not their priority.
Yeah.
Right. And so you have to just be aware that everybody has their pet projects.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
And I think bringing stories, then if we go that route, each of us has an example of an animal situation that increases also that urgency that they realize this is their problem. Like the population, we need to really get on these topics. So.
Yeah.
And I have suggestions for how to be more successful, because I deal with the government to keep time and they get back to me. So.
Let's talk more about maybe also at one of those other meetings.
Yeah,
because I know we're already at almost 2 hours. And that's high. Every time I come to a meeting,
yeah.
Sure, informative, and you're giving us opinion. I like
that. Oh, I'll be back. Thank you so much. And then the next one is quick update on progress made for board goals. And then you thought was maybe.
I put that in there. I was curious what other people did. Obviously, some people are shared. But I wanted to follow up on things I worked over the last year. One of the things I started last year was an intern thing, trying to get it for Donna's APC office. And it wasn't successful last year, but this year I was able to get them to approve to allow opportunity for credit to do an internship through your ABC. And I talked to William to see if we had any response. He had one response, and he's not sure it's going to go through, or may have not gone through, but it started in going.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was good. But he said he did get a call, and whether it goes through or not, I don't think it went through, but the call started coming. Next thing was I put our internship, but voluntary offer to HP, east side of the county. So they have volunteer hours for all their employees, and they do so many hours per month and so many hours per year. I got that approved to put on their volunteer list, and it was approved. I got a call back in January, but after a meeting. So the HP now can volunteer for you. And I talked to a guy who was actually no longer, he retired from them, but he's working them as a consultant. His name is Bob from China. And he confirmed to me that they have that opportunity now. That's just recent. So you might get a volunteer in that respect. I followed through with the thing I worked with Donna last year about the neighborhood associations. I was able to get contacts from multiple associations who said they put information about licensing and the importance of licensing. I gave them a list you and I created and we all approved of about the value of licensing your pet, how it helps with animal welfare, and so on. And they were able to get back to me. Some of them were going to put those in their newsletters. William was aware of everything. He like confirmed everything with them. And then he took the ball on that, and I believe he talked to one or two neighborhood associations since that time. It's been about a month, so I'm not sure. Finally, I was able to secure the cleanup bags for the gifts for dog owners or patrons of the lock dog thing. So I secured those, and then they were passed out. Tori, what was the event called again?
It's that
Ace of Humane Society Walk and Talk.
Yeah.
And so I was able to get those
dog walk
cleanup bags for him to give our booth to pass out free to patrons. So that was since then. And I'm working on congressional and federal animal welfare standards. And I know that Red is also working on it. So if he wants to say something, he's doing a state level thing. Is Red there?
Oh, yeah. So I've been working on developing recommendations just to see where the state might be able to help the county address some of the animal welfare issues better, whether that's changing laws like the training requirements for animal control officers or funding issues or just in improving animal welfare in general. So I'm in the research phase still, but I've worked on getting in contact with some people too.
Was that the end of your informant, or did we get cut off?
Oh. I don't have more to substantiate on necessarily. I'm still sort of in the research phase of that, but I'll have more soon, hopefully.
Thank you. And it sounded like there was a mic issue, so I thought we lost you for a second.
So thank you. He's working on the state level. I'm working on a national level, trying to meet some of the goals that we've been talking about in our committee and our board. One of the things, I was able to secure financing for newspaper ads for the Columbian newspaper. They approved, gave me a really good offer, and I submitted a trial through what we all agreed to William, and I was waiting back on whether the wording I picked. It's the basic wording that we have said. This is all a continuation of what I started last year before. I just joined the committee. I left the one committee and went on to stayed on just the code committee. But that is a continuation of, like Donna said, nothing happens fast. It took months and months and months for them to either get back to me or get approval. Nothing was done without the approval of our board prior to us doing anything that I've just said. So
I don't recall any of what you're talking about. Like, I don't recall like discussing newspaper ads and voting on that. So when did that happen?
Well, I brought up last meeting in January, and I said if you stop off after with me, you're more than welcome to do it from the outreach committee. And there was a continuation of what I had done prior to leaving the outreach committee. And I didn't want to not follow through when I got contacted. Hey, you contacted me about advertising, is this, you know, and so on. So neighborhood association is just a continuation of what I've already done for the committee. And I offered last board meeting in January to hand it off if you wanted to, or I'd finish it. And since no one talked to me after the meeting, I just finished it. And then I handed it all through William. So he was aware of everything I did before I I finished that more to Donna than she was aware. I even used her wording and actually thank you. Your wording about what kind of work they would be able to do as an intern was actually what got more interest involved. And so that was good.
Okay, so I just have a quick question about the newspaper ads. So you're donating newspaper ads?
I secured the funding to do a trial ad to show, they have a monthly a flyer, about community flyer. It could go in there. And we missed the deadline for May. Because I told them I'd get back to them after I got approval. The messages were what we've already said. It was like a couple of sentences long.
You keep saying like what we said. I don't know when did that happen.
Licensing helps animal control services. License Your Pet helps our community with I don't have the list with me right now.
I think that was maybe. It sounds familiar from one of the original brainstorming.
Yes, it was, and it was exact wording. I didn't. I just picked two or three lines that we'd all said, and I proposed those. And we didn't make the deadline for May. They offered it again for June.
Did you say William?
Yes, I made him aware. He was in an email on everything I've discussed.
So it doesn't have anything. So we don't need to take any action on that. That's something we're working
on. Correct. It's just an update. William's going to do the, he said he would. And I got an email from one of the associations that said there's going to be a speaker. I think it was William that said he would do it. So I'm no longer contacting neighbor associations. I'm only dealing with ones I previously tried to deal with. I'm no longer promoting licensing outreach because I'm no longer in anymore. But I finished up that. I might follow up with WSU and say, hey, we got one offer to do an internship. Do you have anybody else? Do you need for information? Since it was my my project that I worked on during 2024, we missed the deadlines for 2024 summer, but I was well in advance this time. If it comes up, I might contact them again and say, if the board doesn't want me to, I would say, fine, leave it to outreach, that's fine. But they might get more interns. At HP, I can double check with them periodically, do you have any volunteers? But if the board doesn't want me to do that, I initiated them, I followed them through. And like I said, again, I don't do anything without board approval before. That's it.
Thank you. You know, again, I really wasn't going to be here tonight, but these are your first quarter statistics. I typically, what I'll do is I'll run statistics from your board and see where we're at, but I don't have those and I didn't prepare those. So I can't tell you where we are at from 1 year to the next, which is what I'd like to do. I can provide that information in the follow-up email, certainly. But, I mean, these are the similar statistics that we see every quarter with regard to what service calls that we're providing, how many notices that we're issuing, penalties that we've collected, and then licensing information. So the awesome stuff at the bottom is from shelter. This tells you... I can tell you that I know that calls are up significantly. I don't have a percentage for you, but it's a lot.
I hear that you're seeing, I mean, everybody that I'm hearing is saying summer numbers.
Yes. So, yeah. We were experiencing summer numbers in March, which is crazy. I can tell by looking at the intake numbers that you know, how do I say that? I'm having a stroke. We intaked, I think we're at over what we took for all of last year. Really close. I mean, it's high. So we're taking in a lot more animals than we have been in the past. So, you know, I don't have... don't have a point of reference as to why that is. I can't tell you if it's multiple cases or women cases or whether it's just not. I don't have my pulse on the statistics like I used to. So perhaps the next meeting we'll have a little bit more information.
No problem.
Somebody else can be like the job. I look at it anytime. We have our meeting cut license program up and running. It was a rough start. We started in February. I would say that we had kinks all the way up until now. So we're working. We have less and less and less, and I think we only have one or two major things to work through. So we're getting through that. And so as a result, I think we're having problems with renewal notices, so the revenue is down, and so it's kind of been, up and down. So we're trying to work through all of that and iron out everything before we really push forward and put it out there to other licensing agents.
Do you feel like you're there, ready to do that, or do you feel like there's still some new kinks to work out before you're ready?
I think we're close.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Jackie, what do you think? She lives and breathes it every day.
So this week alone, our revenue has increased quite a bit in terms of licensing, and that is solely direct, like, correlates to renewals going out on time. But in terms of getting, like, onboarding new people, I think that discussions with them with that spreadsheet we've been working out. I got an email back from one of the people who said they appreciate the edits I made, and then they're going to work on it and get back to us next week. If it imports, it's like an import spreadsheet.
Oh, okay.
To make importing licensing much faster.
Oh, okay.
So as long as all of that works out, then we can start like with Humane Society and then branching out.
Okay. When you're ready to branch out, let us know here, and then as the board, like individually, we can all like reach out to people, because the more licensing agents, the better, right?
And we've had an increase of some vets being interested since we've done the rabies requirement. We have different vets interested in doing licensing and stuff.
Oh, that's great.
We have a list of people to.
That's encouraging.
Well, I think that they feel better about issuing the licensing and keeping. So they don't feel like they're violating their customers, right? Like, which is the reason why we offer that as an option.
Right.
So we want a licensing revenue. We want to know which dogs are for rabies vaccination for safety and for quarantine purposes, right? I'm less worried about a dog with a rabies vaccination being quarantined than I am if we don't have that information. So. That's moving forward. It's a slow go, but it's getting there.
We also have the donation button on the website, which small amounts, but we still like every quarter, every month we get a good extra 100.
Nice.
From that, so
it's a start.
Yeah,
it is a start. We didn't have that option before. And then I will tell you that I know that there is we just approved a new licensing video that was produced by ABTV. So that should be available on our website, if it's not already, very soon. And that would be something like, for example, if Friends of.
Yeah, share that out.
On the website, they could do that, and it talks about licensing. It's part and part kind of what we're building towards trying to do that licensing campaign and getting more information. It's really all about education and how do we reach more people and tell them how important it is and getting more people to license their animals. Okay.
Cute. And then they would have also the Human Society stats. And that's everything that was on our agenda. There are no other topics or no objections we can adjourn the meeting. Okay, so the meeting is adjourned, and our next one is on July 24th.
Thanks, everyone. So we're back in Sandra, but we catch you back in for like 1 or 2 minutes.